Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, John? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggly.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
General population. Yeah, the whole scene yellow takes off. Yellow tape everywhere. Police everywhere. The ghetto bird got the ghetto reserve. Yeah. Better look both ways for that hot sign, nigga. It's L.A. I'm South Central now. Born in L.A. Raised in Compton. Eastside, nigga. I get it in. The sunrise. Let the truth be told. I'm young, not dumb, I've come so far. My car don't run, it's hard. Where I'm from, guns go off daily. It's fucked up in the slums, everybody gone crazy. God, can you show me a sign? I'm living blind, I'm trying to play my part, but it's hard, last in line. Don't think I'm past my time, and I'm loco crazy. 4-4 in the photo, you know my Mercedes, nigga. Fuck a mentor, fuck I need him for. Fighting made it this far.
Copy that.
10-4, I feel like I'm 10-4. I ain't even 6-4, I'm in the neighborhood every morning. Big boy.
Two
doing this music, we ain't missing screws and ain't losing fuse, like we just get in the booth and don't really be doing it, but I will do you in and do it moving. I know this niggas get brave once they see you made it, know a nigga with shit to lose, ain't eager to fuel, niggas get fired on and it's all on you, the general population, rest in peace little dude, I ain't even gotta do shit, my dudes is fools, surrounded by hot heads, hiring hands and goons. Justified cause you in the public eye, you're liable. But I'ma hit you with a JFK like I'm your rival, rival.
If I put this paper down, still got my hustle, man, got it off the ground. Hey, try so I know how we get it. Six foot up, man, we came a long way. Now it's ours, yeah. Ghetto made us who we are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Episode 445 underway. Monday Night Raw exclusive off the cuff radio. I'm your host, King Eric, the media assassin. This show is sponsored by Cocaine's Buddy Boy Entertainment, Fleetwood and the Cot Pickers, Cole Financial, Jesse's Boutique, and Da Vinci Clothing. Got my host, T-Max, with the facts in the building.
What it do, what it do. Another Monday Night of Magnificence. OCC up in the building. Shout out to our co-host and Spirit of All Fame as Agent Schiller. We got a magnanimous, magnificent, monumental show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, yes, sir. We got one of the West Coast legends on this show tonight. King, tell everybody who it is, man.
Man, let me tell you, man, this guy right here, we had to reach out to him because his music and what he contributed played the soundtrack to many of our lives. You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about the work speaks for itself. He helped helped Ice Cube pioneer his signature sound, which what made him a legend today. You can hear his work on America's Most. You can hear his work on Death Certificate, Dub C's debut and the Mad Circle's debut album. Working with Exhibit, Cool G Rap. He also got projects titled General Population that's out. This guy still hasn't stopped the beat, man. So, without further ado, let's bring on DJ Sir Jinx to Off the Cuff Radio, man. What's good, my man?
Yeah. What's up? Can y'all hear me?
We can
yes,
hear
sir.
You.
Hello? Oh, okay.
We can hear you.
What's up with you players?
Legend from the West, from the left coast. What it do, man? You got the most, man. Jinx, this is monumental, man. We are excited, man. Welcome.
I appreciate you guys reaching out. You know, I usually don't. I kind of handpick who I want to talk to. You know, sometimes it's not like I'm privileged or anything. It's just like I don't feel like my story is important enough sometimes. So when I feel like a person thinks the story is important, then I'll reach out and be like, okay, I like if you wanted a head or, you know, you really into hip-hop and stuff like that, and I'm all ears. I'm a B-boy for real.
Jinx, I mean, for what you have contributed to the soundtrack of the West Coast and hip-hop in general, I mean, you are up there on the Rushmore of greats. I mean, you are on the Rushmore with you are on the Rushmore with Dr. Dre, Battle Cat, you know, Cole 187, you know, the late great Crazy Tunes. I mean, for like King said, your resume of insane collaborations, creations, and accomplishments and achievements speak for themselves in terms of the legacy that you have, you know, brought us, man. Your story is not only necessary for you to tell, it's essential. And that's why we had to get you on.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it, man. You know, when people realize that the small people in the back, you know, big artists don't make themselves, you know, so they need a good team. And I figure most of the time, you know, I like being behind the scene. I like seeing how a project develops into nothing, into a trend. You know, that's one of the best feelings out of doing music is when your music becomes the in song to play in the street. Like, you don't have to tell nobody to listen to your demo. They playing it for you now.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. Every star rapper, because, you know, we often compare this game to like the movie game in different senses, where the rappers are the actors and the producers and the beat makers, like you guys, y'all like the engineers and the producers. And the work that
right.
you've done, man, you know, you brought out some of Ice Cube's best work, which made him the name that he is today. And before we, you know, go on to this interview, you want to let people know what you got going on recently, like what you've been up to, for those who already don't know?
Well, with me being in the music game, you know, I've been in the game for maybe like 35 years, you know, so you got to find your space. You can't always chase the same rabbit, if you understand. And so I've moved more to the administration situation. So I've been helping people, you know, manage their company, set up their distribution, knowing how to retrieve it, knowing how to set up your Instagrams and your Facebooks and stuff, because there's a lot of artists that is not really previewed to the information on how the internet could work for them. So, you know, I got a bunch of cats that I deal with. We just released two albums, actually four, because we released two albums last year with Jail Felony. Jail Felony got Loco Entertainment. Jail Felony just released two more albums. We did the In the Trenches and the Hood, Hood Invasion. We did one, and we did one and two, and we just released that. You know, I'm working on a project with Brother Jay right now. We're going to put that together. You know what I'm saying? I was just on the line with K-Solo, and, you know, I just want people like that. I've been working with people like that. I got a bunch of new artists that I don't want to taint their situation. You know, I want you to be surprised about it, because some of them are not developed yet. And I think that when you come out, you should come out and be ready. So I've been putting out my albums. I got an album called Hood War Order. And my other album is called The West Wing. And I also released five different instrumental records. So I got Beats for Food, Jinxtamentals, Next Man's Treasure, The City Never Sleeps. I got a bunch of them, man. I've been dropping product, bro. And a lot of the people that be out there and they racing to want to be accepted, they should just go to where they're accepted and you still can eat. But if you go out too far, nobody's going to help you. So I kind of stay in my little shallow end where I can help people and they can actually help me stay in the music industry rather than me just always trying to be the producer, always trying to be the spearhead. Most of my guys that I deal with now, they're bosses like me, so we make decisions. I don't make decisions for them. So that's what I've been doing, keeping my nose clean and just trying to learn this game more, man. You never learn enough, I think.
One thing about it, Jinx, is when you mention all of that from the terms of how artists can use the internet, you know, i.e., you know, SoundCloud, YouTube, you know, IG, any form of it that is able to help broaden their music, it shows the excellent evolution that you've had as an entrepreneur, you know, from the music aspect and now to the business side. Shout out to Shondell Jazzy Rosa. We had him on last week. You know, he was talking about, you know, the other week I was talking about the business element of it and how, you know, artists really have to understand how to really make their music work for them. And now you are on the other side of it, from a distinguished veteran to now trusted confidant and business advisor / owner.
Right.
You making that transition from it and, you know, helping to cultivate the next generation of MCs, man, you know, and artists in general. How does that feel, being able to get back in that context and capacity?
Well, you know how it goes. You know, have you ever heard somebody say, you know, stay in your lane? You know, mm-hmm. You won't get hurt. Stay in your lane. So when I'm working with the guys that I'm working with, whether it be, you know, Gangster from the Conrads, you know, whether it be Deadly Threat, you know, whether it be, you know, just Cam, you know, all my guys, I kind of stay in that world. Because if a younger artist want me to produce them, then they're going to do what I say. Now, if a younger mm-hmm. artist got something already going, then I can help them produce that. But I usually try to help the guys in my lane, because there is an open parking lot, I can say. Now, if you guys think of it, put it in your brain, it's like a drive-in theater that I know for a fact that's condemned. The weeds is everywhere. Trash is everywhere. But I know for a fact that that drive-in is going to turn into hip-hop contemporary. And that's music that's based on age-appropriate music for people our age, my age. Hip-hop has age groups. So you just can't go
right.
shooting at the kids assuming that they're going to like it because they don't understand. That's just like us when we was kids. I mean, we did like the Delphonics and the stuff like that, but we didn't understand the lyrics until we got older. We didn't know
right.
what the fuck they were saying. I didn't. You know, so now it's the same thing with us now. In different categories of music, different genres, you can go back to the country people, country music, they have an older category. They got a Willie Nelson. They got Willie Nelson and Garth Brooks. They have an older selection of music. So that's what I want to do and build take a drive-in theater. This is all mental. It's not really, I'm saying go get a drive-in. I just see that there's an open genre that doesn't even exist right now. But if
mm-hmm.
rappers that I've been talking about move into another category, then we can protect what is coming out of these rappers' mouth. Then we can protect who we protect when the person goes to the hospital and needs some help. We know who to protect because they're not spewing violence to the people to order to make money off of. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that rappers that are over 30, over 40 should be making songs more age appropriate for women and men my age that want to hear some good rap without a dude taking my girl in every song and a girl want to sit on my face in every song. Like, word, I can't even play it like in my car. I mean, you know, I'm playing, you don't got a girl in your car or whatever, a woman, I should say. And then you can't even go through the selections of the new music because it sounds so fucking disrespectful. If the girl with you in the car starts singing it, you're going to look at her different.
And one thing, one thing about it, Jinx, is when you look at it from the era, you know, King and myself, we're older in a generation. So it's like we came up at a time where, you know, it was that variety, whether you wanted it raw or whether you wanted it tender, you know, whether you wanted it, you know, commercial or whether you wanted it on the convict, you know, side of it. But it was hip hop that was all over. That was a wide palette, like you were, like at the beginning of what you were talking about in terms of DJs, how they
diversity.
Put out music.
A lot of diversity. A lot of diversity.
Exactly. When we look at how it's marketed now, you know, when we were growing up, the radio stations, before Clear Channel, before iHeart, before all these corporations came in, you had independently owned stations, like on y'all side of the West. Shout out K-Day. You know, I mean,
Greg,
it was where,
my guy.
You know, DJs back in the day had the freedom to bring in music that was new, it was fresh, it was something that if it was dope, okay, let the people be the judge of it and see if it's hot or not, rather than let these corporations force feed it down our throat on some shit that wasn't good to begin with. But it became popular, not because it was great, but it was because it was just in constant rotation where you were forced to listen to nothing to it. When you look at it from your time, in terms of how music was marketed then, how do you see it now in terms of what has changed and how it's being promoted?
Well, one of the things that really changed hip-hop is the thirst to want to be different. That changed everything. You know, and I, a long time ago, I would rather be whack and consistent, rather be dope once. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I would rather be whack all day than try to be dope once, you know. And everybody want to be dope all the time. And you can't be dope all the time. You have to, your stuff has to fluctuate. I mean, it's like watching TV. If you're watching a TV show and then you know the lady's kid is missing and then it goes to the commercial and a rock song come on. You know what I'm saying? It's like is no transition. The transition's got to be better. Everybody is doing the same thing. They're not challenging themselves to get in a platform where they can own what they're doing. So this is why all these niggas is on drugs and shit. I don't know if I should be cursing, but this is why they all on drugs.
It's
because they're not appreciating the trophies of what they're doing because they know they're biting and there's no value in what they're doing because they didn't make it up. So if you make your music up, it's under my heart. It's like my kids. I take it very serious. But if I start biting off other people, guess what? I'm going to start doing drugs too. What else the fuck I got to do with my time? You can't be serious when you're biting off other people.
Now, I want to shoot this to you too, Jeans. I got a question shot to me from Pegas Jackson from the collar. He wants to know, did sampling laws play a key impact in producing today?
I don't understand. Say it again.
Yes. When they passed the sample laws in the early 2000s, like, did that play a role in hurting people's creativity?
Nah. Not at all. What that did was make the music industry take apart what we were creating. So it's like cream out through the bar. Now y'all can't jump. You know what I'm saying? We selling millions of records. They don't want that because they was robbing them artists anyway. So
right.
When you do a sample, you might open a can of worms on some real bullshit. And the labels want the same thing with me and George Clinton. You know, shout out to George Clinton. George Clinton came to us. We know George Clinton personally. And he said, I'll give y'all permission to use the music. But for some reason, the record label don't get the hint, and we get sued. So it's the record labels doing it, and they want to get money out of something they don't have nothing to do with.
Exactly.
And that was a quick flip. That was a quick flip back in the day. But then, go ahead.
Yeah, and I was just about to say, Jinx, because for those that don't know, because on Off the Cuff Radio, as well as doing dope and incredible interviews with legends, we also like to educate our listeners as well in terms of like what King was talking about. And the landmark case and the sampling, I'm going to drop some information here for those who may not understand, may not know about it. This was the landmark case started in 1991 with Biz Markie when he used, for Just a Friend, Gilbert O'Sullivan's Alone Again. And
it wasn't just a friend. I'm gonna let y'all know it wasn't just a friend.
Okay.
He did it again. He did another song that they got. It was Just a Friend. That's when he thought he can just grab any old kind of jingle like that. Because I know I was
right.
with Warner Brothers and dealing with Benny Medina, and shout out to Clarence Jones. That's my heart that kept me up in Warner Brothers. But go ahead. But that's what happened.
Okay, thank you for clarification on that, Jinx. And it was a case that was the Grand Upright Music Limited versus Warner Brothers Records. And that was considered in the music industry the landmark case that would ultimately, dictate how, sample clearances would be utilized, for the remainder, up to now, from that day forward, because, of course, O'Sullivan won in his favor, and that was where they had to start going through those, hoops, artists had to go through hoops in terms of actually having legal paperwork behind it. Jeez, we got a lot to talk about tonight because we haven't even gotten into how you started in the game. And we are not going to get off the air, my nigga, until we talk about one of my all-time favorite albums from my favorite rapper ever, Kool G Rap and DJ Polo.
Man.
Of the Live and Let Die that you were on. We cannot leave tonight without talking about that. I mean, woo.
Yes, sir. But let me tell you something. We'll go back to the thing. With the sample issue, they made up the laws that wasn't no law. So they started basing samples on numbers and not basing samples on the public. So at the end of the day, they was basing the sample on numbers that was on the record rather than just licensing the publisher. So if you license the song, then you don't, all that number shit is out the window.
Right.
They didn't tell us that. And Jack and the Beast is the most sampled
Jackie Beats is the historic record that has the most samples in it in history.
Yeah.
That song took 150% to put out.
Hmm.
You say how you make 150%? Because we had to do Kill It Will. And Kill It Will, we put Gotta Say What's Up. Or we did something, a couple of remixes. But we gave the publishing to Jack and Fabiz because there was no way Jack and Fabiz could be on the album and then take away from another producer's beat. You know, so it had to be, that's why I was the only producer on Kill It Will. Because I can give up the publishing on my songs for another one of my songs to go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, so tell us in terms of before all of this, Jinx, I mean, tell us how you started in the game, man. Because, I mean, your history in this is long and it's, I mean, your career. Yes. I mean, your career rivals just about anybody in the business. Those who really know hip-hop know how important you are. Tell us how this all started.
Man, I was just into music, man. That was my peaceful journey, you know. That was my little mission by myself. And I wasn't an athlete or nothing like that. I wasn't a gang member. I wasn't a drug dealer. So that was my drug. That was what I fought for. Just for the B-boyism and graffiti and music and, you know, dancing and fashion. I was just into all that. And all of it played a part eventually. So I took time out to be a graffiti artist. I took time out to be a breakdancer. I took time out to be, you know what I'm saying, a fashion designer. I took time out to be a rapper. So at this point, I started learning how to put this in a place to make it work rather than just working with a rapper and he has no direction. We would have to figure out the direction and figure out all the stuff. So I was just into music like that. And, you know, I didn't really care about the fame. I didn't know nothing about that. I just thought I was better at doing music in my area than niggas was better at playing football or doing anything. I just wanted to be better at something.
That's dope, man. And I mean, when you started, I mean, and of course, Jazzy, like I said earlier on, because I just hit my man Jazzy, you know, Managed East Status from Jazzy Management, who was Granny on one of the Dub C albums. He said, "What's up, man?"
Yeah, I put him on it. I was the one that put him on it. Yeah, Jazzy is my guy. And Jazzy always would bring me, like, man, Jinx's the first person that paid me to do it.
First when he producer about to do it, man. Got to put you on. Got to put you on for that. Like, the same way Soulja Boy, the first rapper to do this, you the first producer to do A, X, Y, and Z. So we got to put that a disclaimer.
Right. But it was so funny, man, with having an imagination and stuff can just come out the blue and be readily ready. Jazzy D was always dope. And then, you know, and he wasn't a person that wanted to be popular, you know, so he didn't make a lot of issues and stuff. He was like, man, I'm just glad you got me on the album. And then he'll tell you, I don't know if he said it, but he used to say it all the time. And he'd say that he was just finna leave. And I turned around and wrote him a check, and he couldn't believe it. He was like, man, I thought this was an insert, you know, or whatever, you know. He thought it was that important. And I paid everybody. Anybody I work with, I pay. I learned that from Dr. Dre, and I didn't mean to rhyme.
And you
know what? And on top of that, though, man, like, When you get started, man, you just got started on your craftsmanship. Like, what were some of the albums that you studied to finally find your sound?
Oh, all of them, man. The crazy part, I don't like going way back. I think it's kind of boring sometimes. But the blessed part about my life is my mother. People didn't heard this already, but y'all fan base and the people that's listening. It was like a beautiful storm. My mother used to work at a company called Burco back in the day. And Burco was a manufacturing for merchandise, a company. So when you go in the warehouse or tower and you see the print stand-ups and cardboard, you see the box sets, you see anything that doesn't look like it came from the record company and look like they're promoting it, my mother worked at a company, did that over in Silver Lake. So when she would work, they would work with, this is when I'm like 12, 13, and she would bring the records home. So when she would bring the records home, whoever she was, they was working with, the artist, because that's how I started learning, like RCA, Capitol Records, Columbia. I knew all these as a child because I used to just read the labels and read them, just see what was going on. And a lot of it was world music. So I was dealing with all kind of stuff from not Marilyn Manson, but from what you call it? Everybody thought it was crazy. I never heard it. Well, it don't matter. But anyway, I was just open to a whole bunch of music. So I just started liking how the music would change and come together. I'm trying to think of the group name, not Ministry.
What are they saying?
I have no clue, but I'm just saying all the music that used to come to my mom and she'd bring it home. What's the rock group with the skeleton? What's the group with the skeleton? Which is Scary Skeleton.
You got Overkill. You have Metallica. If you give me a song, I can probably think who it was. Motorhead. You thinking of Motorhead?
Nah, you got to go back to like. But anyway, when you ask me what kind of music, I'm just saying I was just privy to everything. And rap music really didn't have a direction. Like, so I would like Barry White, or I like Isaac Hayes, or I like the OJs, or I like, you know what I'm saying, Teddy Pendergrass, Earth, Wind & Fire. These are all the people that I looked up to. Marcus Miller with Luther Vandross, you know, Maurice White, you know, Burdine. I knew these people and didn't even know them. I didn't even know I was going to be in the music industry. I just started being a DJ.
What was it like on the West Coast during that time in terms of hip-hop, in terms of as it really started to grow, mature, and then ultimately blow?
Well, it went through a few changes at first for the West Coast. At first, it was a little bit faster. Faster than Egyptian Lover and Dream Team and, you know, those kind of groups was out at that time. It was hip-hop was different then. And then it changed again. And then it started, you know, I Don't Want to Be Lovers. It slowed down. And then the N.W.A. came, and it changed again. So when the gangster part came, that's when we released anything of caring about getting a record deal anymore. We didn't care about that no more. Eric had bread. When you got a home, and you got some bread, man, you feel different.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all, you talk different. Eric was one of the first people, I swear to God. Now, a whole bunch of New York rappers, they can probably get mad. But I wasn't there, what they talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I was there when Eric was there. And I always said, Eric took us to the Sheraton's, the 5-star hotel. And we talking about 89, you know, 88, 87. So Eric always had money. So when we start putting out records, it was nothing.
Right.
Man, you can say whatever you want.
Go ahead.
No, I said, and you can say whatever you want. Like, wouldn't that be the dopest thing alive if motherfucking Eazy-E was your fucking principal of your high school?
Man, look, what did Alice Cooper have in that song? School's out forever.
Right.
You know, but you get in that lesson. I mean, but Jinx, when you look at it back in the day, you know, you look at Ice-T when he dropped, you know, Ron Pace, you know, back in 86.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of years later, you have Straight Outta Compton that drops that really kicks the door open for all of y'all on the West. And like you said, for those that really don't understand the history in terms of it, Eazy was the brain behind N.W.A., but like you said, when you're taking about the 88, 89, 90, you're talking about y'all was like living it up on the hog, you know, straight hogging on it. And this is during the time, you know, to have that kind of money even then was substantial. You know, a lot of that stuff these rappers, you know, talk about in their songs and videos today, I'm like, y'all were actually living it back then, you know, when rap still really had it quite, you know, broken through on that scale of popularity that it is today.
I'm gonna be real with y'all because I always like being real. It wasn't the same. It wasn't the same at all. Because wherever there was a loophole back in the day, that's where your money went. But these young today, they getting their money. You can't trick the internet.
Right.
You can't trick it. Now you can trick, let me get your contract and we get the film. No, we don't keep track of that, and we can get it from storage and we can look over your contract later. Yeah, the nigga, you find that you sold gay your kids away. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know how to Photoshop contracts. Who makes you think, well, the motherfucker don't know how to do that? Feel me? But at the end of the day, the internet don't lie. It can't, you can't lie on the numbers on the internet. The internet never stops. So these youngins now, they get money around the clock. Right, that never stops. So they getting way, way, way more money than we were getting. Way more money.
When did you know during that time?
I'm talking comma different money, not just numbers. I'm talking comma different today. Which is good, but I always say that at the end of the day, maybe you guys might like this little situation that I said, and I said it a couple of days ago, and it's positive.
Right.
And I said that if guys want to always – everybody's talking about doing a union or doing something for rappers that are not so well off anymore, and, you know, they looking all crafty and stuff. And I'm saying, well, why wouldn't a genre help a genre?
Right.
You feel me?
Right.
Like, if you backpack, why don't you help your backpack homie? If you a gangster and you see a gangster nigga to get locked up, why don't you help your gangster nigga? Why don't y'all help y'all each other out? Just because a nigga's a gangster in New York don't mean he's a opposing op from in L.A. But if you like, you know, Benny the Butcher, something happened to him, you should send him a gift because you like that gangster shit.
Yeah.
I think that's what should happen. You know,
and it keeps the culture thriving, man, because it keeps the culture thriving, and it also showcases that form of unity because it feeds everybody.
Man, look. Oh, quick sidestep too, because I just hit Kenya Ware. She just hit me on the messenger. As she said, ask you about his wardrobe on Straight Outta Compton.
My homegirl. Kenya, yeah, that's my home. She's the wardrobe person on Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah, shout out Kenya.
She kept
Ware,
calling
man.
Me.
Yeah, man. She
called me all. She was calling me, and I didn't want no interference. I didn't want to interfere with the Straight Outta Compton, and I didn't want to give no advice or nothing. And Kenya know me. All day they know me. I didn't have to be there to tell them how they saw me. You know what I'm saying? If they saw me in a fucked up light, then show me fucked up then. But I wasn't a fucked up person, so I was like, well, how could I not? How can I be involved to assume they're going to fuck me up? You know what I'm saying? Like, I would rather them just fuck me up and deal with it like that. But they didn't. They, you know, everybody was like, did you like your character? I'm like, hell yeah. Nigga, when was the last time your face was depicted in a movie theater, nigga? I'm gonna be immortalized forever, nigga. I don't care if I was juggling goddamn balloons.
Yeah, man.
As long as you get all the creditors up there.
Yeah, man.
Man, it's a million people that was on the cutting edge floor of that movie. Trust and believe. They cut a whole bunch of people out of that movie.
Now you know what I'm thinking. Now check this out, guys. Now check this out. Now you know Sylvester Stallone. He did a director's cut for Rocky IV. And, you know, that's like a whole brand-new movie. Now, we may be getting that from Straight Outta Compton. It may be about another 30 years. I'm just saying.
I mean, those are always treats because you have to deal, just like we're dealing with music.
If you want to deal with a record label, you're going to have to do 63 minutes, 64 minutes. That's how long a CD is. So when you get a record
right.
deal, your records are based on how long those songs are or that will only ultimately be on a 64-minute CD. So when you
right.
deal with movies, movies come with strict timelines.
Right.
So you would have to, it
right.
will come up, but it come up in a place on the internet where the digital number is infinity.
Mm.
TV is still dealing with numbers, but the internet is infinity. Because the internet, you don't need a CD.
Yeah, and when you look at it, to give context to what you're saying, Jinx, shout out to, of course, DJ Yella, too, because we interviewed him a couple months ago, and he talked about the movie as well.
Yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah.
That's my guy. Go ahead.
You know, but when you but to give context to what you were saying, Jinx, about how movies are broken down, when you look at shout out to Leonardo DiCaprio in Gangs of New York, from what I heard, the original cut for that movie was like, I think they said when they initially did it, that movie was originally like, I think they filmed at least close to 6-7 hours of footage.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, when you look at one of the all-time classics, Once Upon a Time in America, you know.
Right.
I mean, just watching that by itself was a long-ass movie. I remember watching that back in 2004 for the first time, and that was long. You know,
right,
hey,
but back
you remember
in the days,
when we had Mr. Servo on, he talked about there's two versions of I'm About It out there, because one of them
right,
was too long.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But you got to remember, I keep telling you, that the reels and how they were being taken out of the whatever they were being made in changed. So when you start going back in the day, like back in the day when was working in the studio Westlake, I have everything in there. It's called porn. Like it's like studio porn. You know, I can get anything. You know, hey, let me get another scooter in this motherfucker. You know, two scooters. I'm ordering anything. I got a 2-inch digital Sony going. And then at some point, when you start dealing with those reels to make the album, your album could be only so long until the CD came, you know. So that's mm-hmm. why you can only – that's why Knee Deep from George Clinton was only 50 – was a little bit longer than 15 minutes maybe, is because the reels are not longer than 15 minutes.
Right.
So you can't have a song back in them days that was longer than that because there was no tape machine to play it.
Yeah, I mean, it was like with D'Angelo years ago when he did the original Voodoo album, because this is also a mix in terms of what was recorded and then how the business works, because the original Voodoo album D'Angelo had back in, this is going back to 97, because Voodoo wouldn't come out until 2000, but
right.
he recorded over 70 hours of music for Voodoo, for the original Voodoo album. And then EMI folded
right.
in the United States, so he lost the album because they owned it. So he had to basically redo the album that would eventually come out in 2000. God, I wish I could hear that whole original record. Oh, my goodness.
No, let me tell you. Hey, forget about that. What you want to do is hear the original version of Live and Let Die before they changed it.
Oh, God. Tell us
before
the
they changed
tell
the Fuji rap album.
Tell us
that
story, my brother.
Tell us the story.
Well, you know, you guys already set it off with the Biz Markie. So you know that the Biz Markie situation was Cold Chillin'. That's Fly Tie. That's Cold Chillin'.
Yes, sir.
So now Cold Chillin' is under the light. They under the hot light. So now we got Biz Markie doing that. And then now we got Ice-T with the Cop Killer shit. So now they going on to G-Rap
right.
crazy. So they going on G-Rap crazy, like, what sound is that? That sound like, so they had a staff meeting where they put people in a room and see if they can figure out samples we didn't get cleared. So they went through the whole album on their own. It's like, oh, this sound right here, 2 minutes in, sounds like this song. The song is not being cleared, you got to take it off. So we like, God damn. So they went hard on us, and then they took a year to put Live and Let Die out, But I got Live and Let Die album right now. I got the original album without the sample changes. And if you go listen to G-Rap on the internet, he'll give you that, yo, the niggas held my shit. They like fuck G-Rap, like, for some reason.
Dude.
They like held G-Rap album like it was a detox album. Like, they just kept on, you know, in today's time, that you can't hold a album that you have promoted more than 2 months. If a person, and we're saying back in them days, they held it for damn near a whole year. I didn't think the album was going to come out. But I still got the original version. So to all the fans out there, I will release the Coogi Rap, Live and Let Die, that got 2 extra songs on it.
Oh, my God,
it was 2 songs that they didn't let me on the record.
Man.
One was called 121 Not Permitted.
Put that out.
Go ahead.
We in line and get that, brother. We in line.
All right. But I know how
to do it
for real. So at the end of the day, I'm going to team up with G-Rap and put the ball back in our hand, you know. But I'm working on other stuff right now, and that's really not in my focus. But at the end of the day, I've been doing some moving, going through my storage and stuff like that. So I've been finding all kind of gems and all kind of dats. I got probably over 200 and some dats to go through to find, like, my old music and stuff. So that's how I found the Coogi Rap with the masters, the A and B side. With Bullet in the Head is different. The one with Number One with a Bullet. That was with Coogi. That was with Big Daddy Kane. That song is even different. It's a few songs on there is different. And they tried to mix it without me because they didn't want to pay me no more. So I thought that was cold. They did G-Rap like that.
Oh, that was foul, man. That
and
was,
I gave
them
a deal. And I gave them the best deal in the motherfucking world. And they still cut the dude.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you good.
Uh-huh.
You back on.
Okay. Yeah, Jinx, because something happened on my phone. I got cut and I got kicked out of the host queue, but I'm back in. I was about to say, dude, I will give you my address for you to mail me that original album. For those that don't know, because once again, we got to give a history lesson. For those, because it's hard as hell to find now, and I thank the good Lord that I got all 3 of those re-releases back in 2007 and 2008 from Cold Chillin', because you can't even find those things now. But the story behind Live and Let Die is a saga in itself, because this is the time during the 1990s where gangster rap is really big. And this album was basically G-Rap going to the next level. I remember when I was younger back in 1992 and my cousin had it. And, I knew about G-Rap prior too, but Live and Let Die was an album I absolutely fell in love with. I mean, Operation CB, Edge of Sanity,
Shoot to the Head,
Number One with a Bullet. On the Run, I mean, where you have that Untouchable sample at first.
I gotta send a shout out to my man Matt that song that run. He just passed away. So, you know.
Shout out to my man.
That song on Coogi Rap Records.
Yeah, but I mean that opening verse, he kicked on the run. I got a job with the mob making G's, doing some pickups, deliveries and transporting keys. Yeah, they got me like a flunky. I'm riding around with 10 kilos inside my trunk, G, and I'm holding the suitcase with $500,000 right in my
motherfucking
face. And
$500,000 a long time ago was $10 million now.
Man, I mean, the thought alone makes me shiver. Damn, what if I get caught and I'll be floating in the Hudson River? But if I escape, I'll be in shape for my life, but they might get my kid and my wife. But the album was so controversial because of the cover itself and then the subject matter. I mean, because that was a hard record. When he said still wanted dead or alive, he was like, the tricks ain't over, the battle ain't done yet. Get your ass out of town before sunset. Bullets you felt, got you running for help, you getting struck in my nine, it's still tucked under the belt. I'm like, I'm like, what?
Hey, ironically enough, that album has an anniversary coming up in 2 days, actually.
For Live and Let Die?
Hey,
what we need to do, if we got any listeners out there, somebody go and find who is putting this record out, because it's not Warner Brothers, and they not picking up the phone. But when that lawyer call, whoever's got this album, they're going to have some restitution to think about. So they might want to be my friend now, and I can throw the money in the air and just say, give me my shit. Or I'm going to come to them with a legal situation and say, now you illegally put out my music. Fuck what Coochie Rap talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is my music. So I didn't give my music to Cold Chillin'. So whoever put Coochie Rap out, because it's on the what you call it, I swear to God, bro. I tried to put Coochie Rap, like the some unreleased, and On the Run, Home Sweet Home. I tried to put one of them on my SoundCloud, and it got flagged, my nigga.
Oh, wow.
It got flagged.
And you the one that made it. I mean.
Right. So I don't trip on that, because we don't trip on small shit. You know, giants don't trip over small shit. So we just let it be there and let them be comfortable and then warn them. Like, hey, you know, next week we're coming. So if you want to just figure it out and you listen to somebody, say, hey, bro, they on you, because they was talking about it on a radio show. Isn't it? We don't want no smoke because you're doing something illegal. And just because we don't have the money to chase you down or whatever, the internet gonna chase you down. And all I'm saying is don't sell it on the internet. Don't sell that album on the internet.
What did you all learn back in the day and even today, Jinx, about how the business is in reference to making sure that it's, you know, that you keep it that it's kept respectful and right, you know, as we say, keeping it Jewish. What were the deals like for artists back then, as opposed to what it is now?
Well, the deals back in the day for the cats that's listening, they were very cutthroat. They were so cutthroat, they were damn near illegal.
Ooh,
on the way that they were doing it. You know, so back, you know, when you're dealing with music and you deal with a point system, they have a point system. How many points you get off your album is how much your record is going to actually sell in the stores. So if you get you Babyface or Donna Ross, you probably 15 points, like, you know, because that album going to probably be $30 or $50 a bushel, you know. So the people back in the day, they would take half. They say you 9-point deal, they'll break it in half. So now you know that 4.5. I mean, we open on this. So now that 4.5, if you break it down, you got to take 3 of that 5 and split it with the producers. Now the management and the production team, they're going to get the other two. So now it's 3, that's 2, ain't no more. So this is how this is how TLC and Tony Braxton fell into that thing. So now they say, well, we can give them a point out of the producer's points. So then they take the producer's point, because a point could break down like in the 5 different ways. So a point is a pizza. So it can break down. But them two that go into the production team, that don't get split. Those are big diamonds. You don't split them. And that other 4,
right,
RCA or Arista guy, nah, you ain't going to never see that. You might as well count that to the sky. So now you're trying to figure out how you're going to get Tony Braxton some money. So then now you say, okay, well, fuck it. I'll give her Babyface. I'll give her some of mine because I did all the songs. So
right,
he get the 2 and he get the points on the production. They were just puppets.
Rest in peace to Left Eye, because when they did it Behind the Music on TLC years ago, this was back, I believe, in 2000, 2001, because she died in 2002, but she was talking about how, you know, because that whole situation with, you know, Pebbles, you know, real name Perry Reed. You know, they were talking about, she was talking about how this, when Muff had the infamous, the famous quote, "This is how you sell $1 million and you're still broke." And T-Boss said, "I think when we signed a contract, we were only millionaires for maybe 5 minutes." If I have it right.
Right. It makes
sense. Yeah.
It all makes sense. It depends on what side of the tracks you want to be on. Now, you want to feel sorry for the artist? Or put it like this. You want to feel sorry for the gambler or feel sorry for the casino? Who you rolling with? Casino.
Right.
They don't care about that. The casino don't have no eyes. They don't care. You're just a number. And you owe them the money on product that you're making for them. It's amazing. Like I said,
what
it's some of the shit to be against the law. You heard?
Look,
you
Jinx,
heard what I said?
Look, Jinx.
You got to pay
look,
the
Jinx,
money
Jinx.
Back.
Yeah.
That money.
Right. What did they say? What did my man Robert De Niro say as Ace Rothstein in the opening lines of Casino, y'all? At the end of the day, the role of the casino is to keep them playing, you know, and to keep them coming back. The longer they play, the more they lose. In the end, we get it all.
They don't have no feelings. The only people who have feelings is gamblers because they have a passion to win. The people that are casinos don't have no passion to lose.
When did you all know back in the day, Jinx, from when the West Coast really started to really bubble? Because, of course, like I said, Ice-T and NWA really kicked it off. So that opened up the doors for guys like, of course, you know, Compton's Most Wanted, you know, DJ Quick, Cam, of course. We cannot forget when Cube went solo and just dropped it, like four atomic bombs in a row. And then, of course, we can't forget guys like Deadly Threat, you know, Sick in the Head, because I have that album. Oh, my God. For those that don't have Sick in the Head from with Let the Dog, oh, God. I mean, you know, when did you all realize that you all, and of course, Dr. Dre with the Chronic, I mean, when did you all realize on the West Coast this was the ushering in of a new guard in terms of an extension of the hip-hop culture taking over?
Well, it's kind of funny, and it's no disrespect, but it was from us being naive to the situation at hand. So when hip-hop had kind of started, we thought that New York was making hip-hop music. And we thought that that's what you say on hip-hop music. But then we figured out New York niggas was saying shit that was going on in their world, and the shit they were saying does not apply out here. You know, child is born with no state of mind. He'd be like, okay, yeah, I get it. But, you know, hand, pushed in front of the train. You know, we don't know what the fuck that means. Ain't nobody get pushed no front of no train in L.A. I mean, not in them days. So when we started expressing ourselves, we were only giving hip-hop to the world because we thought that we got a view. And when we first started, we were rapping like Beastie Boys. You know, we were yelling like Run. You know, we were being smooth like Slick Rick. You know, we was being tough like Chuck D. But we thought that was hip-hop. We didn't know we could be gangster. And when gangsters started, then it gave an opinion to a crowd of people that understood that. Just like you can have a mob beat and bring mob beat to Linwood, I guarantee I don't know too many niggas know mob beat. And they might know the song, but it's just they're not into that. It's not they don't like it. It's just I know for a fact that if you go some places in L.A., some people don't even know who Mobb Deep is. But I love Mobb Deep. I love all the music that come with, you know, hip hop is my baby. But everybody don't look at it the same way. You know, so when we start getting our view, the New York guys start saying the way we giving our story is whack.
Everybody looks at it with different.
they were serious. Hip hop started in the East Coast. Yeah, okay, okay, we get that to y'all, but we can't do it the way we want to do it. My girlfriend, my lady friends, they like the way I say it. I don't know if they like the way the other guy say it. They like Eazy-E. He doesn't have to rap hard. He's too short. He don't have to do all that. I'll take a too short over all any lyrical miracle ass rapper. That he talking what I know. Now, I know if you want to be competitive and battle somebody, maybe that might not be the area Too Short might. But who knows? I would put Too Short up against a battle any nigga. I bet you he'll win. I bet you. I was just thinking about it, you know. Like, Too Short could say something so basic that had a whole crowd hear the punchline. You know what I'm saying? But what you was asking me about the difference, you know, back in them days, we just thought that we had a view. And I know that a New York nigga couldn't tell me about Chuck Taylors, about Cortez, about the shit we were doing. You know what I'm saying? We were doing all the stuff they were doing and trying to be cool. But then when we try to show up, they say we acting goofy. So we started just being our own self and letting them just be normal. And y'all got to accept these khakis and 501s. That's what we wear. We don't wear Lee jeans and sweatsuits and Kangos. We did, but we didn't get no respect for doing that.
You know, one
now,
thing about it, Jinx, is...
I got another question. I got another question shot from this cat going by the name of Tadal. He wants to know, do you have any old tapes from the CIA days?
I got all of them.
There it is.
I got all of them. Every last one. I got the stuff when we was in the stereo crew. I told you I was just moving. So all the stuff that was in my storage, and I had stored stuff away. Now, I told you it was over 100 and something DATs. So if it's 100 and something DATs, probably thousands of cassettes with no names on it and no telling what's on them. But at some point, I did separate some cassettes years ago. They inside of a wooden box with suede. I think it's like a jury box that I found or something, and I just keep the cassettes in it. And these are like Eazy-E. Like I found the Eazy-E cassette from Audio Achievements 88. And that cassette is, you know, in the same place where the CIA demos and all the stuff that we did back in the day. Even the song that we got signed to we got signed to Epic Records. And our song that we got signed to Epic Records, Larkin Arnold and Michael Jackson put our song in the Bad video. So it was a lot going on for us at 15 years old.
But when you look at it, man, that's something that at 15, you were already in the rotation in terms of what, did you all know at this time that you were going to end up legendary like you did? I mean, of course, you know, starting out with Cube, you know, y'all in the stereo crew, you know, it's like when we look at your history, Jinx, it's like it was already written that you were going to be a legend. Of course, you know, you being a cousin of Dre, you know, it's just like the genius just runs through the whole family. Did you all know what you were putting together would change the way we listen to hip hop forever?
Well, nobody had no clue. I wouldn't say that I know. I don't know. I didn't know. When you're dealing with people in life, you can only dictate what they say. You can't tell people what you do all the time. You got to listen to what they call you. And when people call you something, you can't walk into a spot like I'm a doctor. They'd be like, hey, he's a doctor. You know what I'm saying? You got to believe that. You know.
Now, you've done
another question. Hold on. I got another question here. He also wanted to know, did you technically discover the Liquid Crew?
No, I did. That's King T.
Okay.
King T discovered the liquor.
Shout out to Common.
Yeah, shout
legend,
out to King Tipsy. Yeah, that's my OG, man. I talked to him, man. Everybody that y'all said on the phone, that's the names that y'all said, y'all haven't said not one name. Well, yes, you have. But y'all said a few, a bunch of names. And a lot of the people I've talked to recently. Like, we talk because we are what we got. You know what I'm saying?
And
like, me
dope.
And Aunt Banks, we be on the phone all the time. You know what
Hacking
I'm saying? Like, it's kind
of
crazy.
My
friends are musicians. Huh? What'd you say?
Mr. Packing the Gun himself, yes.
Mr. Banks, Aunt Banks?
Yeah, man. Man, that badass man from the Bay, man. I mean, he... Oh, man. I mean, but this is like, this is lovely, man, because the people you're mentioning are people we grew up listening to and still appreciate to this day. I mean, when you look at it, man, because we still got a little bit of time to go, when you look at all the stuff that was going on musically, because you got a lot of collaborations. I mean, and this is one of King's favorite artists right here, Cece Peniston. How did that collaboration with her come about?
Man, Cece's so beautiful. And back in the day, I didn't want the stigma for me to be a rap producer. Being a rap producer is a difference between $3,500 and $45,000. That's what's different. So when they come in, they want me to help out, want me to work with Tragedy or, you know, whoever organized Noise, you know, they were on the face. Them numbers be rap numbers. But Cece Peniston numbers be 40 and 80 and 50, and they come and they're there. You don't have to sign for it. It comes to the house. You know, I mean, it's so a different kind of process dealing with an artist like Cece Peniston.
You said it comes to the house. I'm like, man, that's some FedEx finance right there. Oh, my goodness.
No, that ain't FedEx. That's probably a dude. That's a dude in a car that has a job to deliver shit.
Understood.
But this is a long time ago. Remember, this is still 93 or somewhere around
here. Right.
So her situation was real nice, and she was growing as an artist. And, man, we had so much fun. She lives in Arizona. So rather than her having to go to the hotel, she just moved into my house, and so it stayed with me.
Oh, wow.
That's stuff that people don't know. You know, I'm seeing her waking up, going to the kitchen, you know. Hey, that's how I work. When I work with people, it's a little bit closer than just, hey, I'm going to sing you a beat and da-da-da-da, you know. If it don't make no real rhythm outside of it, then it's not really important to me. So when I work with Cece Peniston, that start changing my value game. So then I start working with Gerald Levert. Then I start working with Mint Condition, Sounds of Blackness, and doing all kind of stuff with them. So when that aired that time, when I had left the Cube situation, that's what I was doing.
And
so
for those
I
that don't know,
backed up. I had worked backed up so long. That's why all those albums kept coming out. You put me in the studio. I know the punchline. I know the finish line. I know where it's supposed to be done. Bam, get it out of here. Okay, we're going to do this one. If you got a studio and you've never been in a studio, you should never be sleepy. You can sleep when you die. So
and
when
I mean,
I'm in that studio at that point, we're going to pump out albums. Everybody was dropping albums.
Yeah. And
we
did the
Dale.
You got to remember the Dale album. We did that album, too.
There was a lot of music
that was coming out. Right. Shout out to my homeboy, Dale. And Ty J and Adam.
Yeah, man. Shout out to the Hieroglyphics, man. You know, Casual, Souls of Mischief, you know, Dell, that whole crew, man.
Right.
One thing you said about it, Jinx, is when you look at the diversification of your portfolio being an artist, producer, because you're both, it does drive up your price because, like Fat Joe said, the price gone up because people see your range. When you said that, Jinx, it immediately – came to my mind about the work.
Before you get to the end of what you're saying, It wasn't the price went up. The value of me went up.
Right.
So
understood.
To deal with
understood.
Groups, you don't get paid. Then you come in through a door where they sit in the lobby. You know, you can't park there. You know, I went to the floor. I went to the level of producing people that I get respected. So I'm pulling up, hey, hi, Jinx, anything? Want some coffee? No, I'm fine. You know, but if you working on this other rap dude and he on A&M Records or something, you coming in, they think you stealing in the motherfucker.
Right. And I was immediately thinking of DJ Premier when he did that album with Christina Aguilera. And
right.
We were like, when we saw Primo do that, and not only did he do it, he oh, my God. I mean, that album was just... I think that was called, what was that album called, King? Was it called Dirty, I believe, that he did with Christina Aguilera? Did he do the majority of that on it?
Yeah,
okay, Christina, okay.
Well, I mean, you can't.
No, I think,
hey,
it's,
look,
called,
you
I think
can't,
it's called
you...
Strip.
Strip, okay, thank you, King.
Y'all good.
But yeah, but when
you can't
he did
put
that,
a,
right?
You can't put a noose, look, you can't put a noose on a producer's neck that ultimately has a vision. So when I make my music, it's really not me making music. It's out of how I see it. So I can take the same how I see it and apply it to a country artist. They can be the same thing. So because I feel it this way. It's not like, oh, I know how the music going to sound. No, I know how it's going to feel. I know how I see it this way, you know. So that's where you get a premiere. And they doubt you for it. Oh, what you going to do? And then they're going to doubt me again. Didn't think I could work with rock motherfuckers? Okay, let's go. That's how I did the Rage Against the Machine album, you know, the bullet in the head with them, you know. And they didn't think I could do it. I'm like, send anything down this motherfucker. I'm a producer, not a rap producer. I produce music rappers like. I produce music, period. I can put it together wherever.
That's what's great about having Long. That's what's great about having Long, because your range goes beyond just being a rap producer. Like, man, you amongst one of the greatest in terms of your diversity.
Right. I worry about how it sounds later and just worry about how it feels first. And if it feels like it, because it's your interpretation of what you think perfection is, you know. So if you don't have no interpretation of perfection, you shouldn't be judging yourself. Everything might be fucking good, you know. But I do. So when I think of something, I just always know that I'm at least damn near close. I'm not far away. I'm not far away. Whenever I do any music, it ain't going to be nobody that listen to my music and say, it's so fucking whack that I have lost my mind. It's still going to be bumping first. It's still going to be clear first. So that should be dope anyway. I ain't going to never lose that.
Now,
I ain't going to never lose the clarity and high feels. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, is there any songs in particular that you produced that, like, you know, gave you the goosebumps, like, this is some incredible shit right here. This one's going to take off. Like, you ever had one of them songs that gave you that feeling?
A lot of them. A lot of them make you feel different. You don't never just work on stuff and just be like, I don't think this bitch is going to do it. You know, and then it might be songs that you really didn't work too hard on that got really, really, really famous. Like, you know. But repeat your question again.
Yeah, I wanted to know which songs in particular that you produced gave you like that goosebumps, man.
You Can't Play on My Yo-Yo. When I did You Can't Play on My Yo-Yo, it was right after coming back from New York and working with Chuck D and Eric Sadler and Hank Shockley and Keith Shockley. And I learned something that Dre didn't teach me. And that's, you can change your whole motherfucking song. I didn't know you could do that. When I came back, I changed You Can't Play to My Yo-Yo, Can't Play with My Yo-Yo with the Devotions. Because the first version of You Can't Play on My Yo-Yo was a James Brown loop, and it was Spank. The song's called Spank. And you can still hear James Brown. Ha! You can still hear him, and you can't play my yo-yo. Mm-hmm. And then I got Eric Sermon. It's so funny. You got Eric Sermon go, hey, yo. So that's all. That was like just how all that worked later. And then it was so funny. So then I end up, you know, seeing Latifah. And then Latifah was like, what's up with that? Because, you know, don't try to play me out is Latifah.
Right.
Right. Because that's from Method of My Madness, I think.
So we did
that song, and I changed it to the Devotions. Then the homegirl that I used to that used to be in my little team, my little crew I had, her name was Carla, and she ain't never been in no studio or nothing. And she came in play, ooh, she did it, and she landed it. Nobody knew what I was working on because the vocals was basically the same. And then we came and added we added another rap at the end. And when we added that other rap to the end, that made me feel something different. I knew that song was going to be a hit. I like that song a lot.
Yeah. When Make Way for the Motherlode dropped, man, in 1989, I mean, that was just, I mean, you know, Yo-Yo just came out of just, I mean, I'm in middle school at the time we first hear that, and it just hit like a bomb out here in Virginia. And we were like, yo, who is this girl right here?
Man, Yo-Yo is a bundle of goddamn energy. I mean, if you know, they say be careful what you ask for because you just might get it. So Yo-Yo was the first person that we saw out to be a girl, lynch mob girl. Like, she came before that was even an option. Like, that wasn't an option. We was like, oh, we just doing this just to, you know, Cube can have his lynch mob and NWA and Easy and the deal. We didn't think of, you know, lynch NWA didn't have no girls. You know what I'm saying? So we were trying to do lynch mob kind of like that. But when she came, man, how could you put her off? You would put your shit in the back seat to help her.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the kind of girl.
And then, look, going, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. But the crazy part is we did Yo-Yo's album, Make Way for the Motherlode, before we did America's Most Wanted. So when while we was out working on America's Most Wanted, that's when he was shopping her, trying to shop her and get her a deal. So her deal was being pushed back. Wasn't really nobody biting. So then we took the song that was supposed to be the single on Yo-Yo's record. Rather than stomping to the 90s, it was supposed to be It's a Man's World. So then we took that off of Yo-Yo's record and put it on Cube's record because we was in the studio so long that they didn't make no songs together. Like, they were all not there at the same time. So we was like, anytime she came to New York, and woo-woo, Cube was gone. And then when Cube come back, he want to hear what she got, and he like, you know, he ain't writing to it. So that didn't happen in New York. So we just said, man, take that. It's a Man's World. So that's how that made it to Cube's record. So you had to say that Yo-Yo had a record that Cube wanted to put on America's Most Wanted. So Yo-Yo was with the business. You know what I'm saying? Who would think like a Fat Joe would take a record off of Remy Ma's album to complete a classic? So Remy Ma got the classic spirit. You know what I'm saying? That was supposed to be her single.
Because there was always some stories, Jinx, we had heard about that in terms of, you know, somewhere between it was a recycle song to the B Factor. So I'm glad somebody who was actually there can give clarity to the actual process of how, you know, everything, you know, worked out the way that it did. When you look at that 90s era and going into it, when you saw a lot of these artists coming out the West Coast, man, I mean, you know, Dre does a Chronic in 92, Snoop drops Doggy Style in 93, you know, Murder Was the Case drops to 94. We're going to the Death Row era a little bit, but it's still all West Coast. I mean, you all are like just totally like just thumping the game completely. I mean, we're seeing from when you realize that all of the stuff y'all had out there, I mean, the Palm Trees, the Lolo, Six Foes, Pretty Girls, the Endo Smoke, you know, we seeing Seawalking coming in. You know, we're understanding how y'all live on y'all side of the street.
Right.
What was it? When did you, I mean, just from an artist's perspective and knowing your music was having that reach all over for all of you, you and your contemporaries, how did that feel?
Well, the dope thing about the West Coast back in the day is if you can almost lay all the rappers that you like, MC8, Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, Ice-T, you know, Dr. Dre, it's almost like a puzzle. And none of those people step on anybody's feet because they don't all talk about the same thing, but they are all gangster rappers. But what the spot they hold in what they're doing is different. So the outsiders might think they're the same, but when you say how could Yo-Yo fit, because she was in a place, she was in her place. She wasn't trying to be a gangster. She was the girl that the gangsters was hanging with. That's how we wanted her to look. So she like, you ain't going to be hitting me no more, nigga. So she talking like the gangbang girlfriend, but she's not a gang member. She want righteousness for black women and equal equality and all the blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? So she's sliding that in. So, of course, she ain't going to be stepping on Snoop Dogg. No, she's not talking about Ice-T. You know, she's not talking about that because Snoop Dogg don't act the way she talking about the guys in her songs. You know what I'm saying?
And you know what was ill about it, Jinx, is when you saw her Yo-Yo come in the game, and I'd be remiss without even mentioning the Bay Area, you know, of course, Aunt Banks, you know, E-40, Mac,
right.
The late, great Mac Dre, you know, Too Short, all of them were doing their thing. But when I think what Yo-Yo
right.
was at that time in the 90s, especially with the message she had, and of course, shout out, her clique, IWBC, Intelligent Black Women Coalition, IBWC, yeah, man. I mean, she really, really, really was bringing a really powerful message of empowerment to black women and just women all over, no matter who you were. It was about,
Hey, I saw the future. I'm trying to, I saw the future because I'm not into certain kind of things. So for me to put her in a gangster kind of world, but not implement her in anything. She just making music for the women that are around the dudes that are around us. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So this is how Yo-Yo fit. She wasn't trying to be hardcore. She was hardcore. She wasn't trying to do. She wasn't shaking her ass. She had a body. She got green eyes. I mean, damn.
Yeah.
You're like, what the fuck? She got green eyes.
Those eyes.
Like, where'd she get them? And then you start seeing the quality in her. And then you're like, oh, shit, she's dressing down. If Yo-Yo dressed up, they would have overdid it. You know what I'm saying? We got that from Chuck D. They said all the women that dress up like high-priced secretaries are going to be, they're going to let their fan base down because their fans cannot afford what they do. Buy the clothes that your fans like. And Yo-Yo with the braids, that's why we kept her. All the girls with the braids, all the girls with the dookie braids, the biker pants, it's a song for you. You know what I'm saying? She spoke for those people. She spoke for the girls that, my, the girls that are in the street, but not hoe. She's not a hoe, no.
She was a baddie that hung around baddies. Shout out to her girls, Knick Knack, and all of them, too. Oh, my God.
Oh, Knick Knack. Oh, no. You beat up Knick Knack. That's amazing. Knick Knack has been popular.
Yeah.
Nah, she's a homegirl. I know Knick Knack. We was on the road, man. That's my girl. Long time ago. I know Knick Knack.
Yeah.
And building on with, current Lynch Mob members and people of that circle. Do you still keep in touch with KD?
Nah, not really. I talked to KD, but when we were back in the day, it was like KD and Cube were friends. So when situations went the way they went, Cube and they went to school together. I went to school with them for a little bit, but they were friends in school. Cube is older than me. So a lot of the people that I dealt with, because I was much younger than them, dealing with, well, not much younger, 1 year younger, but that was a lot for an older, a 12th grader to be kicking it with an 11th grader. That's, you know what I'm saying, that's how that started. So a lot of the people I really didn't associate with when we were growing up. We didn't really have the same thing in common. But he's my guy. I still love him. You know? Shout out KD. He's
what
a Gemini.
Did you learn about what did you learn about the business in terms of how things sometimes, even between friends, you know, and associates, can go bad in terms of who you dealt with along the way and just how it doesn't always stay as copacetic as you would like it?
Well, what I can say about that is this. If you both you brothers, you got five friends. I mean, you got five people, very responsible people that you trust your life with. In your mind, I know. I usually say 10 because I have more people. So I say 10. 10 people in a round table. And these are all the people in your life. And if you know, in both of you guys' life separate. When you put one drumstick on the in the middle of that table, somebody at that table gonna think that that drumstick is theirs, and you just don't know. You just gotta wait for it to happen. And it's usually not the person you think. You know, but you can't be surprised. Because I didn't want it, because I got a whole box of them in the back. You know what I'm saying? I didn't say that. See, I can go into this crazy, but that's how the music industry is. You don't know who you're dealing with until a stack of 100,000 is on the table. You don't know who is who. I know I've been making money for years. I'm not bragging, but at the end of the day, dudes be doing anything to make a dollar right now. I don't need to make a dollar right now. I do need to make some money, but shit, you know, some people want some money right now. They already in debt. So when you put that piece of meat on that table, they said they had your back from day one. He should know that's mine. You know what I'm saying? And that's the part that crushes you in the music industry is when that's your best friend.
Yeah,
that's part of the music industry. Your
we
best friend, I was going
to say, and going on with that, Alvin, he wants to know where do you currently stand with Ice Cube, and why did you sue him if you did? You know, we want to put clarification on Off the Cuff Radio.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about something else.
Understood.
Keep it positive.
Understood. But one thing about it, Jinx, is what you said about the business can be crazy. I mean, when we saw the situation going on years ago when Juvenile talked about what was going on at Cash Money with Birdman, you know, that 2001 XXL story where he was talking about how that whole thing happened and how he wasn't getting his money. And then he was saying that even then that, like, Wayne, you know, Turk, BG, a couple years later, you know, BG speaks on it, he wasn't getting his money. You know, like you said, when you come into it, when you're dealing with people, you never really know how things are going to go because there's a shared struggle. I mean, we only speak on this one off the cuff because these are situations that have been documented. These have been talked about it publicly. We're not saying anything that has not been already discussed in a public forum. I mean, the situation.
I appreciate you guys, you know, I swear, because I like that you put out the disclaimer. Because, like you said, that this information is open to the public. I'm just an accurate source that I say I think this is how it went, and I'm not biased, you know. So I'm like, hey, if it happened this way, it happened this way. It could, you know, give inspiration to people that might feel like they the underdog, and they might hear that
Absolutely.
I was the underdog, but then I kept going, you know, and all the stuff that went wrong in my life, I played 50% of it. So, you know, it's a lot of my adjustments that make me go forward, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and even then when you look at the situation with the Wu-Tang Clan and all the stuff that happened there, you know, because it's like everybody, you know, like you said, when you see everything come in and you're having a person who has the vision, this is why we've talked to so many people on this show in the years we have done this about understanding the business and understand whether mm-hmm. you're dealing with friends or whether you're dealing with a label. We've always said this in terms of like what you said about your friends, you know, Jinx, that even sometimes that can go bad because you're going to have that one guy who thinks he deserves a little bit more, even if he didn't do all the work, you know,
right.
Just like we have situations where we go
or
into
no work at all. How about no work at all?
That too.
Right.
That too.
Right.
And then, of course, dealing with record labels where they'll say where they give you this. And me and King and myself have seen those record company contracts.
Oh, yeah, we dialogue about this for a while, man.
Yeah, and
I told you that damn near illegal. They like one page from being just damn near illegal. One B4 dial to go to B or C. This one C or D. They that one thing. That motherfucker is illegal as mother.
Yeah, and
it is illegal.
And then they'll want to have you talk to their lawyer about looking at the legality of it. And we're like, no, you get your own lawyer to look at that.
That's that old
right.
Tom and Jerry move.
Yeah, that's cartoon.
Well, at the end of the day, it's a big situation. You know, when you deal
mm-hmm.
with a person saying they finna give you $250,000, $300,000, $400,000. At some point, they do have a validation on what's going to happen. So they're going
right.
to give you the money.
Right.
You're going to have to pay it back. And then the percentage they pay you, you're going to pay them back in that percentage. So this is how you're never going to come out of debt. So if you got a record that's $9 and then they split it down, and then you, at the end of the day, like they said, I'm going to break it all the way down to what they say. It's like a dollar or something. Dollar, let's say $1.45 that they actually get
right.
off the album when that album sells. $1.45. Now, they already got a record deal, and they did $300,000. They did a promotional tour, and that promotional tour is $100,000. The outfit, that was $75,000. All that stuff, you got to pay the label back. In
right.
intervals of $1.45.
Oh God, no! Oh hell, no!
Right, you're never going to fill that bucket.
But one thing about it, Jinx, is when we think about the history of it too, is this is where because we got to give because you're in the industry, so you saw how a lot of these contracts work with certain artists. Like back in the day. Like artists like Mariah, Whitney, Luther, God rest his soul. Whitney, of course, God rest her soul. You would see these artists, I think, and you can clarify the numbers for us because you know how this works. Back in the day, if you were a top-end artist like they were, you were getting maybe $1 or $2 off of every record sale, which was considered back in the day. Like you were really
–
yeah,
exactly. We're talking 45
yes.
cents. 45,
mm-hmm.
10, 45 cents. Yeah, that's way down there.
Right.
But go ahead.
Right. And this is why over the years I think the DIY of getting it, you know, has been so prevalent where where you saw these labels like E1, you know, Koch, you know, all of them,
right.
you know, Landspeed, where artists would go there independently because, and this is how people have to understand what it is now going to those independent labels.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something, and, you know, we want to give our, you know, listeners game as well. And please, you know, chime in, correct me if I say anything incorrect or anything. One thing about it is when you have artists now who are going the independent route, you get more money off of what you make. Like if you sign with E1 or Landspeed, you know, you would make $7-$8 a record, but you were responsible for everything else in terms of your promotion and handling the project. However, you get the lion's share. Now, this is something that for artists thinking about doing this, established artists who already have a fan base can do that because their fans, their diehard fans are going to buy the record regardless because they're a brand. But for a novice coming in, make sure you understand that you already have a name on an independent circuit, that you can do that.
Right.
We're not here to say you shouldn't do independent. We're not saying you should. If it makes sense for you to sign with a major, then you can. But understand, if you sign with a major, what you're, like 50 Cent said one time when he was with Columbia, they assigned him for 8 albums.
Right.
You know, and then after he got shot, they let him off of it, you know. But when you look at these artists coming in on this independent scale, it's great if you've already made your name.
Let me tell you like this.
Please.
With the new artists that come in that want to deal with to be independent, mm-hmm. is really freedom. It's more
right.
freedom that you're not following the rules of what record labels need you to do. So record
right.
labels usually come with people that's been in the music industry for a very long time, and the people in that environment run the industry. So if you make music and you don't abide by those rules, then yes, you can be independent. Because you're going to have a product that the record labels don't have. So if you can make that happen, hey, that'll be a good thing. But most of the people that I hear saying they want to be independent is because they're not following the rules and they want too much freedom, and that too much freedom makes weird music.
When we look at one of the godfathers of the West Coast in terms of the Bay Area, and you know where I'm going with this, because of course Short Dog was doing his thing on 75 Girls Records way back in the day. But when you look at what E-40 did with Jive Records, where he has his distribution, but Stick With It is his label, and he just had Jive as his distributor. And Uncle 40 has
right.
been doing it for damn, I mean, E-40 is one of my favorite rappers ever. And to see him doing, shout out to his son, man, shout out to him, Sugar T, you know, Droopy, doing his own beats, you know, having his own business.
E-40 had an endless supply. So he had an endless supply and a bunch and the people that wanted to buy it. He didn't need the record label. He didn't need the sign. But at the end of the day, when we came in the game, there was no other world to sell your music in. So now with the internet being the record label can't control the internet. So they would crush an artist a long time ago if you didn't get a record deal. Then how would your record be played if it was never on a record player?
Right.
They didn't have any other means of somebody to play it. How would they play it? So that's how they made a monopoly. I know you guys don't know not one nigga in the world that had a record maker. Don't that seem like some easy shit to get?
Right. You're right.
No. Right, no, you can't. You can't even buy them up. You can now, but not in the compunction days, you couldn't. Not in the Peebo Bryson days, you couldn't.
That was unheard of back in the day to just step out on your own and do it yourself.
That was the I got a letter, man, it's crazy. A dude gave it to me years and years and years ago. And it was the demise of the falsetto singer. Like, what happened to all the falsetto singers? What happened to those people that were singing like that? You know, that was a style of music. Everybody was in their falsetto in the early
70s.
Mm-hmm. Right on the outside. Was that Eddie Kendricks? Everybody had a sweet falsetto. So what happened was, this is what I read in this article, is that they wanted more freedom on their music, so they gave them the opportunity to do it on their own. So when they did it on their own, they blackballed them. So then you couldn't bring that music into their environment. So it died. It was almost a bad thing to do. So the labels wouldn't accept no more falsetto singers because they're all, you know, like gangster, like they are mean, they're da-da-da-da. So they all wanted to be independent to find out where they were going. It wasn't even established. The road wasn't paved. There was nobody there. So you want to be independent, you're going to be on a road that's not paved, and there's no guarantee that your car going to make it in a desert road that has no pavement. That's the luxury of dealing with a record company. It's because who they selling the music to, they've been selling this. They've been selling music to them people for over 100 years.
Right, right.
So when you want to be independent, you start in that number with, you know, 10 of your people on Instagram that only just actually viewed your song and not even bought it. You know, this is what the internet is going to do.
And
but now you have
that
total
now.
Freedom. Huh?
Right, right. And when and what you said, Jinx. Yeah.
Huh?
No, just saying, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, you're having total freedom now. We wanted to ask you, Jinx, how do you feel about what the new generation of the West Coast is doing, you know, on an independent scale with guys like G. Perico, Mitchie Slick, Cam and Shana, Compton A.V., Honest Along, you know, daughter of the legendary Pomona player, Cocaine, and, you know, of course, Cole 187's doing his independent, Nefta Farrow.
You know my guy, Mitchie Slick, you know, I started Wrong Kind with Mitchie Slick.
Say what?
I started Wrong Kind with Mitchie Slick.
Dude, Mitchie is like one of my favorite artists. Wet represents 619, Southeast San Diego, Logan Ave, Euclid, Market Street, 41st.
Yeah.
Lincoln Park.
Yeah.
Yes, Four Corners. Yeah, man. Shout out him and CJ,
right.
Rick Nutt, you know, Gangsta E, Meat Face, all
yeah,
of them.
Mitchie
yes.
Slick is my favorite. Man, we go, you know, I've been dealing with San Diego all the way back to the Vicious B Posse days, like, you know, with, you know, Drill Sutton, Ron.
Tell us the story. Tell us this story.
Huh?
Tell us the story
about
how
what?
It started, man. About Wrong Kind, how you
with
and Mitch
who?
Hooked up with it.
That's crazy. What happened was, well, let me finish what you were asking me, how I feel about the artists that are out.
Go ahead.
I love what they're adding to. And then, like I said, it's like a slab of marble that's broke, but everybody
mm-hmm.
can fit. So everything fits perfect. Nobody stepping on nobody's toes. Them guys that you guys just mentioned, I don't hear them saying about the old school, don't be listening to me. Everybody you just mentioned, all give props to their OGs. You know what I'm saying? So I like the group, the names that you say, they all have big homies. And they not one of them renegade kids that, oh, you just don't understand. Like, oh, you old school. They called me a dinosaur one day. I'm like, the dinosaur made up hip-hop.
Exactly. They
right.
recognize you were a legend in this.
Right, but they don't have to listen. That's usually how we keep the population going. Some motherfuckers
mm-hmm.
don't listen. We keep the population down. But people don't motherfucking want to listen. So, hey, I can't teach a person not to kill themselves. That's the only thing that's what they do. I can't encourage motherfuckers, young dudes that ain't never been nowhere to tell me that they vision, they going to see what I already see, but they don't see it. They ain't never seen it before. It just got a vision that's going to happen. But I can tell you the accuracy if it's going to happen or not. The probability of it can if it can happen,
mm-hmm.
but to the situation with Slick, I used to it was the clubs out here in LA. I mean in Hollywood, and my homeboys used to DJ the clubs, and I'll just go up there and then they have like some pool table VIP area that they would always put my little area, you know, kind of in the corner. They knew I would always be right there. So one dude just kept coming up to me, and I see him. And, you know, back in them days, the club was still kind of no jeans. You remember that? It was kind of still, you had to dress up.
Like
you know, it was like
a dress code.
Right. And so the dude ended up, you know, coming up to me and talking to me. And he say, and his name is Reese, Black Reese. And so Reese was like, I was like, he's like, man, I'm from Dago. I come down here, you know what I'm saying? I fuck with Snoop and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, all right, cool. I said, man, you know, I said, you know, so me and him kept talking. So later he said, man, I got some rappers that's out of SD that I want to come, I want to bring them down and put them audition in front of you. And you can pick the first, whatever ones you like, we can put the money behind them. And, you know, the Linkin Park, you guys know what's going on. What, you know, they got money. So he might, we're going to put the money behind it, wherever you pick. So so we met up maybe a couple months later. We ended up meeting up on Melrose at my homeboy Diz, barbecue spot that was like right by La Brea. So we pull around and back. We used to be in the back of that barbecue spot smoking anyway and kicking it. So Reese come, he came with like maybe about 8 people. And it was like a guy and a girl to rap together. It was a girl, a couple other guys, and some other people. I really don't remember. So it's kind of dope that they just vanished, whoever was there. So they were all doing their thing. And we were doing it with the door open in the car. So they kind of just, you know, making it be comfortable, not like no da-da-da-da-da-da, you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, man, let me hear what you got. You know, it's kind of very comfortable environment. So then Mitch was there. So Mitch was like, okay. So the way Mitch sounded, it was over. I just knew it. The way you hear Mitchie Slick, that's the first thing I heard. So all the people went back to San Diego, and then Mitch was around me the majority of when I was working on the 40 Days and 40 Nights album or Exhibit. And so then with Black Reese being with me all the time, Exhibit was moving up in life, like as he's moving up. So I was like, Exhibit, you might want to use Reese as a security guard, you know, because we started doing shows and little pop-up shows and stuff like that. So Exhibit was like, I don't know. So we did one show, I think somewhere far out, and a dude jumped on stage. And Reese grabbed that dude and raised him above his, because Reese is kind of short, but Reese is very fucking strong. And Reese picked the dude up and threw him over the barricade. And Exhibit was like, you're hired. So go ahead.
Yeah, would this be the setting for what would become Strong Arm Steady with Exhibit, Mitch, and all that?
Right.
Them?
Right. So that's how that went that way. But that was later. Because first it was wrong. Because, Strong Arm Steady was Feel and Crondon. But it was but Mitchie Slick, trust and believe, you can say anything you want to say to Mitchie Slick. He going to still have his shit. He's going to be like, oh, you want to be in the group? He's going to be like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll be in the group. But when he leaves, he's going to be like, Logan Ave, nigga, the DIP. He's going back to the shit
Love.
He's doing. You know what I'm saying?
Love, man. Shout out to the Dips, the Termite Squad. I was rocking Triggeration Station in the deck the other day. It's on my IG. That is a hard album. Oh, my God.
He was a very – so when we doing 40 Days and 40 Nights and we sitting there doing it, when I'm writing, when I'm doing music, sometimes I have a pad on the board, and while I'm just listening to the, you know, it play back and pull to the, if something's right, I do a whole mural, because, you know how to do graffiti, so I still do pieces. So I just pick a word, and when I was working, I don't know if it's chamber music or whatever, but Exhibit say Exhibit is the wrong kind, and I was like, that's dope right there. And he was like, well, I said, well, I think we should be the wrong kind. Are you fucking with the wrong kind? And that's when Wrong Kind was made. So I drew the logo. So that logo of Wrong Kind, I drew that. That's my handwriting.
I don't think anybody in the history of hip-hop.
Hard-ass beats, too. That was one of the hardest beats I ever heard.
Which
one?
I don't think in all the history.
Chamber music.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was saying chamber music. That was one of the hardest beats I heard, and especially around 98, when you know that shit was coming back in the hip hop, because you know in 97 everybody was, you know, had the shiny suits. So y'all shifted that energy back in 98 to the hardcore stuff. And when I heard Chamber Music, I was like, good God.
Hey, the crazy thing about Chamber Music is Exhibit used to, you know, always say Black John McClane. He used to always say that. I'm Black John McClane. So I tried to make a track that sound like Braveheart or sound like Mel. What's his name, Mel?
Mel Gibson.
Oh, Bruce
Mel
Will-
Gibson.
Bruce Willis. I tried to make a rap song that sound like dance. You know, he's coming in the helicopter, you know. So I tried to make a track that sound like an action movie. That when I made Chamber Music.
Dude, but I mean, between that history and then also a Ronkin. Look, I'm still geeked off the whole Ronkin story because I don't think any. Have you ever told that story to anybody about how that, or did we just get an exclusive?
What you mean?
About the Ronkin, about
what?
The history of Ronkin, about you and Mitch starting that.
No, you brought it up. You brought it up. I mean, hell yeah, a lot of people know about me and Ronkin. But when you start new artists, I said, Mitch Slick is my guy. Hell yeah, I like the new guy. Hell yeah.
Man, I've been supporting Mitch. I got on Mitch around 2003. Shout out to the Source Magazine because they profiled the album in the Independence Day column. And that's how I found out about Triggeration Station, because the record got released in 2001. And I found out about it in 2003. Like I said, shout out to all of San Diego, man, because I, you know, CJ, I talk to him off and on. You know,
I went down there, I saw a lot of opportunity. Reese is my guy. And, they treat me like a king when I'm there. You know, the elders is always available. They always cooking. It's like a little town, like kind of like a down south area, but better homes, you know what I'm saying? But the attitude is the same. You know, we feel very close, and, you know, they all know each other. I know Mitch's dad. You know, Mitch's dad and his uncle. You know what I'm saying? You just not knowing them dudes like that. You just can't go in San Diego because there's so many different angles to come from that you might slide on somewhere else. And you know, I don't get involved with none of that. So I don't involve myself. Yeah. They say never ask the question so you don't have to lie about the answer. So I don't know. That's not my thing. I'm dealing with the entertainment. And Mitchie was definitely entertaining. His pops ride motorcycles, Harleys, and, you know, he lived a real nice life. You know what I'm saying? So it matches. He matches. He looks like a star. He acts like a star. You know when they say see an aura around a person?
Mm-hmm.
I saw that in
aura, or I think it.
Yeah, that energy is like when somebody can come into a room and just suck that, you know, automatically just gravitate to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I'm here, y'all.
Found all the wrong kind, our first demos that we did a long time ago. I just found them, and me and Mitch is talking, we're going to put them out. As a compilation, we're gonna call it Wrong World One. So that record gonna happen, but it's gonna happen when I get to the studio. So that's gonna be Wrong World One, right? And that's gonna be all the beginning stages of Ronkin.
We need it
all the way
we
to
need
where
it.
It's at right now, and the niggas that are dealing with Ronkin to right now. So we're gonna have just a nice. A block and maybe a documentary on how I go. Because I got millions of pictures of a goddamn Mitchie Slick and video.
Yeah. Man, look,
like just from being
him.
Around.
Yeah.
Just
man,
for being
shout
around
to him,
exhibiting stuff.
Yeah, shout out to him, Da Move, and everybody out there. Yeah, man. Shout out to all the whole Southeast. Yeah, Cricket Beats. Yeah. Cricket is like, oh my goodness, man. Cricket is just a monster on the track.
Yeah, he's very talented. He's been around.
Man.
I mean, he's been around the whole way, man. I swear, I tell you, it's like everybody that I met is probably about 20% that failed. But most of the people I know, whether they're doing good or doing bad, I still know them. And they're not doing bad, you know, but they still legendary people, you know. So I deal with so many different people because I'm like David Banner, you know what I'm saying, Bill Bixby. You know, I just hit my backpack, and, you know, I don't have no, reason to come to your – but I don't have no reason – I don't have a reason to go somewhere and feel like something's going to happen because I'm not the opposing side of nothing. So anybody that approached me and want me to be a for them, they're going to have to figure it out. And then when they hear me, I'm like, nah, brother, that ain't what I heart. And, you know, they go about what they think. That's your thing. Do that to people that you do your thing with. So I'm just here for music. Y'all don't want to like music? Y'all going to kill all the musicians? That's what you're doing. I'm just a musician. So I love making music. I go anywhere just to make some music. Making good music is not always in the safest place.
Yeah.
Now, there's another question I want to shoot to you. Now, when you was talking about earlier about when you was trying to create chamber music for Exhibit, you had visions of the Die Hard movie. Now, do you look at different movies or commercials? Like, what are your, like, inspirations to creating certain music?
Like I was saying, it has to be, I have to see where it's going to be at in life. Like where is it going to go? Like, who's going to like it? What kind of person is going to dance to it? So if I can't see a person, like I'll make a beat, I'll visually see a person and be like, that nigga about this beat or that girl about this beat. You know what I'm saying? So all my music is not action packed or drama or gory, or so to be visual with matching my music to TV, the TV will ruin my visual because I already see it in my eyes. So if the TV go wrong, then it's not a good reference, especially when a Pamper commercial comes on or something. So you'll be mad as fuck, you know? So I get what you're saying. Some people use the TV and let it keep running. But I don't always make mad songs, so I don't always move. So I like to, that's why I made my instrumentals, because I had some songs that already had songs on, but I took the songs off so I don't have to, make people deal with the hook that it was on there. I want them to have a free sense of thinking. So I believe that five different people can make five different hooks on a song, you know? So I like to take music and give it a new face. But go ahead.
Yeah, and I got one more question to shoot, because I know you have to get going. Because, you know, we almost hit that line, but, you know, we got to push that line to get, you know, some good stuff out of here. Another guy, he shot me a question of, do you know where is Rashad Coles is now?
Where's who?
Rashad Coles.
Rashad, I just talked to him yesterday, a couple of days ago. That's Rashad is Rush. That shout out to Rush. Rush did what's the name of the song? He did Colorblind.
Classic track.
He did the Colorblind song for Cube. That's the shot. Yeah, I talked to him. He's doing real good. He's still hanging out with DJ Pooh. Like, we all still know each other. Like, ain't nothing changed. Might not talk to each other every day, but they ain't too far away. Somebody I know is dealing with Pooh. Somebody I know is dealing with Lil D. Or, you know, somebody I know is dealing with Rick. Or all the people from back in the day, they didn't go too far away If you was in the team that we with, the same people that be with Snoop Dogg is the same people that I know. Same people that be with MCA and Chill, same people I know. Ain't nobody can come up and be like, oh, no, I've been with them, for, you know, for ages. Be like, I didn't see you there, brother. I don't care how tough you are. You wasn't there. Because we definitely know who was there and who wasn't there. So most of the people I deal with, like, you know, the guys, I mean, I love it, man. I love that, you know, MC8s and King T's and all the guys are still here and still my, you know, my peers, you know, my West Coast peers. I love my team.
Man, look, and we love this interview. Jinx, this has been an honor, man. We got to do a part two because there's so much more we left on the table, man, to feast on. Dude, to have a legend as yourself is always incredible on the show, man. Thank you again. Is there any shout-outs that you want to give before we sign off for tonight?
Yeah, I got a couple of shout-outs, but I want to give you guys a shout-out because I like to you guys didn't really have – I didn't really give you a format of what I want to talk about and what I don't talk about. I'm sure you guys can figure that out and not make it look whatever, however. But I appreciate that you guys like the inner core of music, and it's just not my story you wanted to hear. It was more or less the process. And when people start talking about the process, that you can't lie about that because it's going to come back to some numbers. The numbers don't lie. The process. Now, you all, well, I made that song. And okay, you can say all that. But who else is going to vouch for you? Because in my world, everybody can vouch for me from the West Coast. Anybody can. I can vouch for all my West Coast guys. You call me up, ask me about Quick. Ask me about, you know what I'm saying, anybody, you know, Too Short, you know, we did This Ain't Nothing But A Word. So we still, you know what I'm saying, going back and forth. These are my confidants being on this West Coast. But I want everybody to check out my album if you can. It's called West Wing. It's a compilation. I got King T, everybody on it, Corrupt. Just go check it out. I got Gangsta Drayster. And check it out. The bomb part about the song I got with Corrupt and Gangsta Drayster is that was the day they squashed all that stuff between Death Row and Eazy-E, and they made a song that night, and it's on West Wing. That's the first time Drayster and Corrupt was on a song together. Oh, man, he was drunk, having a good time, man. It was like happy days is here. That bullshit is over with.
You know what's dope about that, man? It's like even when people have issues like that, as soon as they see that, man, like they see eye to eye, all that just disappeared, man, because, you know, the love and brotherhood is always going to come forth along with good music.
Right. So that's I think they call the song is called Money. I think it's called Money. I got Gangsta from the Conrads on it. MC8 is on it. Roscoe. A whole bunch of people. You know, it was like kind of like a little Dr. Dre kind of attempt. But like with being independent, you know, I get all the proceeds and deal with it how I deal with it. But when they give you a record deal, they're not going to want that album. They're going to want you to make another album up under their rules. So they very seldomly bite into a song that was already a hit on the internet. They usually give them a deal to do something else under their rules. So it really don't matter how long you be independent. The fact is, can you be a major artist, you know? So I got my album out there just to be a demo to show the world, like the guys that are my age are still doing banging-ass tracks. Them songs sound so brand new. And once again, you guys even brought up my album, General Population, Rhyme Scene, Money Over Everything. That's that album. I did that album. I got Butch Cassidy on it, Bone Crusher on it. I got all kind of people. So, you know, I got music out there, you guys. You know what I'm saying? Support Sir Jinx. You know, hit me on my Instagram, DJ Sir Jinx. And you know, talk to me. I'll talk back.
Jinx, you are welcome back anytime, man. I mean, we appreciate this. Thank you again. Thank you.
That's what we love about talking to the producers and the architects, man, because they the ones that's behind the magic. They the ones that the creative force that needs their voices to be heard. And that's why we wanted to reach to you, man, because you played a pivotal part. Your music is like a soundtrack to our lives, man. We want to make sure that you get your accolades.
And peep this. So I dropped another album, an instrumental album called Imperial. That's the one I dropped this year. I swear to God, when we was in the studio mixing it, everybody was talking about just, it was beats, and people was like, nigga, I remember this car was out. I remember we was wearing this. You know, it is a timepiece, you know. So when you hear that sound, I found so many decks, and all the beats came from 90 and 92. So I had hundreds of beats that I made from the SB-1200. So the SB-1200 ain't never around. It ain't around me no more. So anybody like that SB-1200 sound, you know, go check out my Imperial album. I just dropped it this year. Okay. Yeah, sometime this year. And I got another instrumental record coming. So I got a lot of stuff dropping. You know, you guys check in with me, man. It's a lot of stuff going on with the West Coast. Yeah, you know, y'all just got to pick the right Instagrams, get the accurate, you know, get it from the accurate source.
Definitely, bro.
And we here for all of it. On that note, thank you again. For all of our hip hoppers in the universe far and wide, we about to close shop. God bless. Peace, love, and happiness. Thank you again, Jinx.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Already.
And we out.